When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Nothing was just for the plot. Nothing was just for a character emotional moment. It all was well integrated. For fantasy sci-fi authors, Guy Gavreau K is the legend. And you would say that that best six-hour slow-cooked pork loin is equivalent to a Five Guys burger.
Yeah.
This is why people don't trust you.
This is why when you come for my taste here, I have...
Everyone's confused.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Tutor Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
I'm your other host, Richard.
Today, Rich and I are discussing The Lions of El Rasan, our first ever Guy Gavreau K book. And we're going to be talking spoiler-free for the first 10 minutes and then, and then getting into spoilers after that 10-minute mark. Rich, you know why I'm first excited to talk about Guy Gavreau K besides loving the book?
What's your other reason?
Nicholas Eames, who was on here, was, I think, our first Guy Gavreau K proponent. Or he came on and he pitched Guy Gavreau K as his favorite author. He was obsessed with him. He said his prose is incredible. And it was the reason he loved to write and fell in love with stories.
Yeah, we've gotten a couple people that have been real big fans of Guy Gavreau K, but he was definitely the first like interview type deal.
And we know pushed it. Sanderson, I think, has Guy Gavreau K as his top five living, like, top two, I think, living authors. He up there. And so we haven't touched a Guy Gavreau K book until this. And no spoilers for the book other than Rich and I. We loved it.
We loved it, yeah.
Recommend, and we'll tell you why we recommend it. Oh, well, you know what?
Disrespect.
That's a bad sign that it fell. Oh, no.
You know what is a bad sign for you?
Like, what's that?
You, a habitual note taker and post-it note.
Yeah.
You have one.
Open it. Open it. What do you think it is?
It's just the map.
So I could go back to refer to what they were talking about. It was easy.
You can't just flip to the front yourself. You have to have the little bookmark there.
Okay, there's like several, there's like 8-9 pages in
front
of
this.
It. Yep.
Oh, interesting. Walking home with an escort, she realized, where is she? I'm just going to go to the front and, oh, look, there it is.
You know why? Because the tab's there. It helped you get there. You're welcome.
It did not.
It did.
It did.
It did.
I'll rip it out.
So, The Lions of El Rasan, Rich.
Yeah.
Given some background info, this came out in 1995.
This is not going to stay up.
You know what? It's just, it'll fall a couple times, but it'll be okay. There we go. That's better.
Okay.
So it came out in 1995. The reason we read this is because our Patreon Discord, this was our book club of the month, and every single person in that book club, despite one person, Levy, gave this book a 4.5 stars or higher.
Yeah. It is a universally well-loved book.
Yes, and Guy Gavreau K describes this himself. He says it is historical fiction with a quarter turn to the fantastic. Because, Rich, would you describe this as very high fantasy, magical? No.
It's historical fiction, but ooh, it has two moons. Ooh, and like technically, there's a fantastical element in there, but it's not super relevant. And honestly, if written slightly differently, could have been taken out, and it would not have any fantasy at all.
It's historical fiction in a sense.
Yeah, it's mostly historical fiction.
It takes place in medieval Spain, and some of the characters are inspired off of real people. It's very loose. We'll talk about that later when we get the spoilers, but very loosely inspired. This kind of book, medieval Spain, historical fiction, is this our first historical fiction we've really read?
I think I've read other stuff, but for the channel, yes.
Okay, the first we've reviewed on the channel.
Yeah.
Who would you say, what kind of reader, before we get into our review and rating and all that, what kind of reader would like this type of book?
I mean, the Gwen brothers. Of course. Oh, yeah. Gwen Brothers would love this. Gwen Brothers would love it. I'm sure they've actually read it. Yeah. My guess is they've read it already.
Oh, definitely.
Other than that, I think standard fantasy fans get a lot of fun
out of it. Who would love this? And you go, like, these two people out there, if you're watching, would love it.
Yep, those two.
Singling them out.
Yeah.
It's so helpful to the other 90 people that watch this episode, we'll see. But to everybody else, who would like it?
To everyone else, if you're a big fan of looking for, if you're a prose first type of reader, I think this has to be on your list. If you're a big fan of The Name of the Wind, you're a big fan of Robin Hobb, this is probably up your alley as well, because I think it does prose masterfully. The character work is masterfully done. All these things considered, it's not a super action heavy book, but it loves to play with little perspective. It toys with your emotions. I think it's a book for most people. The only thing is, like, maybe if you're only into action books, this wouldn't be for you.
The person who dislikes this book would call it boring. The person who loves it would call it a slow burn.
Sure.
Because for me, it's a crescendoing, amazing, tense, and then encapsulated by the ending, which is very important. So that I would add one more type of reader onto that. Anybody who likes Ken Liu, anybody who's read Grace of Kings, this to me read very much like Grace of Kings and the Dandelion Dynasty, and some of the perspective and the prose-esque, just the vibes I got from it was very Grace of Kings-esque.
That's very fair. Yeah. Especially with plot structure.
Yeah. That was awesome. And to give a little tidbit of, okay, what's the story actually about to convince you to read? And by the way, if you do want to read this book, check out our affiliate link in the description below. And if you want to join book clubs with us and read that stuff like this, join us on our Patreon, the link in the description below as well.
You're getting a lot better at pitching our stuff.
I'm like, trying.
You're remembering. I'm getting on top of it. We got to plug our things.
I'm getting really there.
We forget about it often.
No, we don't.
No, we forget about it till like closer to the end of the video, and then we plug it.
We got to start getting better at that. But yeah. With our reviews, we're typically better. the synopsis of this, there's four main characters. Two of the main ones are these characters, Rodrigo Belmont and Amar Ibn Karan.
Amar Ibn Karan.
Amar Ibn Karan. And this book and these two characters, to sum it up for you, is essentially two men facing off and seeing who has more aura. It's an aura competition with who is the more manly of men. But then you also have Jahane, a doctor's...
Jahan,
did you listen to the audiobook?
I did listen.
That would help. I physically read this. So Jahan, a doctor, and Alvar, who is a soldier boy, learning to become a man and seeing where his journey goes. And it's very much a... Could you add on to that, Rich, of giving us a bit of a pull or hook for somebody, what they're getting out of this?
Sure. Historical context of this story takes place in a, mostly close to historical version of Spain, medieval Spain, of the reconquering by the Christians. So, lands controlled by Islam and Muslims, then reconquered by the Christians, and then, the Jews kind of suffering in the middle of it. Just, they always get the short stick. So that's the context of the book, and the book really goes into these three different religions and groups, not into a specific religious context or what their actual beliefs and differences are, but just as three separate religious groups, how they interact with one another, and the good and the bad, and often the ugly.
And a lot of commentary on war, what makes our identity, and that battle. Our main characters aren't very religious. So Jahan is Kindath, which is analogous for Jewish, because the Guy Gavrilke doesn't say, hey, this is Jewish person, Christian person, Muslim. He uses fantasy words that are analogs
that
for
are basically
fill in the blanks. But our main characters, Amar and Rodrigo, aren't super religious. They don't talk about it a lot. And actually, Amar's secular. So it's more than just that, but there's a lot being said at once.
It's interesting. There's definitely several different groups here. There's the secular. So basically for the Christian, the Muslim, the Jewish groups, there is the secular group, secular representative. And then there is also the fundamentalist representative for I believe all three, but mostly Christian and Muslim. There's both the secular, the reformist, and then the extremist, I guess.
Yeah, you have that perspective.
Better thing to say than other than extremist is just fundamentalist. That's the better word.
And to give, we already gave the perspective of 4.5 stars or higher from all the patrons who joined the book club, which is in the more than a dozen people gave it that rating. Mm-hmm. So very, very well liked. It's a 4.3 on Goodreads. The one thing that really surprised me, and to give some of those names, by the way, shout out to Lucas, who was always vouching for this book for the longest time. It's one of Lucas's favorite books. We're on the same team, Lucas. Kendall loved this book too. Beatrice loved it. Maura loved it. Tons of everybody in the book club loved it. Yeah. But Lucas and Kendall were the biggest supporters of always pushing for this book. And 4.3 in Goodreads, but you know who didn't love it? We talked about this before, Rich. Our boy.
Lucas.
No. He loved it. Just gaslight him.
I'm just going to lie about him.
Patrick Leo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Patrick Leo, if you look up on Goodreads, gave this a 1 star. And some of the things he gave, so maybe this will help for if you don't want to read the book. He said he didn't care for the characters at all and had cringeworthy sex scenes.
I'll be honest, though. Hey, look, if you're reading for the sex scenes, that's what you look for a book on. That's what you're looking for. Written by a guy, these are not that awkward in comparison to something like Neuromancer, where it's like, it's weird. Or plenty of other male-written sex scenes. Most of the time, weird, awkward. Like, just skip it, please. Women can write them better, generally. It doesn't come across as cringe. Guy Gavrik, okay, it's not cringe.
He nails it. Pun intended. He does a great job. It actually moves the plot forward when he's doing those scenes as well.
It's not
in spoiler section. We could talk about it.
I also don't think it's particularly graphic. It's like
they're meaningful scenes.
Yeah, so it typically is meaningful for the character and for the story, rather than just purely
schmutt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So Patrick, this is the first time I'm saying this. Patrick, I very much disagree with you, and he hurt my feelings, Rich.
I know, and man, I trust Patrick with his
degrees.
Throwing everything into question now. Oh no!
So then, what would you tell Patrick and everybody? What is your Rambler rating out of 5 stars for The Lions of El-Rassan?
I'll be honest. I tried. I really tried to figure out a way to not give it this score, but I couldn't not do it. It's a 5 out of 5. Floored me. It would feel wrong to give this book less than a 5.
You not just loved it. It floored you. The book was masterful. Would you use words like that?
Yeah.
I likewise gave this a very high rating.
Nice 3.5.
Some of our old videos would be like you vouching for a book going like 6.3. It was such a frustrating relationship. we had to come together and decide, okay, what is a rating system? How do we define our terms? So now we're here. Kumbaya. Yeah. So I want to say this about the book, just if I haven't encapsulated this in the review already. The scene, especially at the end here, I was never more at the edge of my seat loving a particular scene in this book that got me to go, oh my God, you could do this in books. I didn't know you could do this way. I didn't know you could touch me this way. Again, not another innuendo for a sex scenes, but I didn't know you could do this. And it floored me that much. And this book is masterful. I give this a 4.75 out of 5 stars. Absolutely spectacular book. I will sing a bunch of praises.
Couldn't give it that extra 0.25. Nope. Got to knock it down a little bit.
No, because it's no Red Rising.
It's no Red Rising.
But 4.75, and that just reflects like fives or something. I'll say like, oh, my favorite books. So I love this book, and I think it would be hard if you listen to everything we said here and it seems somewhat up your alley. It won't disappoint if you fit that type of reader.
Yeah. If you only like Dungeon Crawler Carl, maybe this book is not for you.
Sure, yeah.
That's the caveat. Dungeon Crawler Carl is great.
See,
but if you're finding yourself that's the only book you can enjoy, it's the only series, maybe it's not for you. That's fine.
You're a complicated man. You can love your dungeon crawlers and...
And my
Lions of Alderaan.
We can love many things here.
Mm-hmm. So I want, before we go into spoiler warning, do you have a best and worst category for this to touch in? Or is it even worthy to say there's a worst?
I'm in all honesty, there is no worst. There's just least best.
Yeah.
And for me, it's the least best is a tie between thought-provokingness and world-building.
Okay. I'll agree on one of those.
They're still really great.
It's no, just, they are. Least best. I'll say, I'll agree with you on world.
Sure.
Yeah, that's the least best. What about the best category before we get into them?
Pros.
Pros? Understandable. I think even for me, I had to plot floored me. Okay. Spoiler time?
Yeah.
Spoiler warning. Rich, you want to say spoiler warning so you feel like you're a part of this?
I don't need to be
okay.
part of it.
Spoiler it's just warning.
It's the Austin show.
So if you have not read the book or if you just want to listen in and some of you don't care about spoilers, we'll try to give context as we go forward. All right, Rich.
We can only try.
We can try. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay. Emotional impact, what'd you give it out of 5 stars?
A 4.5 out of 5 stars.
Spectacular.
So a very rare moment just on a technical basis of normally our overall score will most often match our emotional impact score. This is the first case I'm giving the overall score higher than my emotional impact.
Okay, I gave it a 4.75 stars. This absolutely spectacular for me. And it's funny you mentioned that because books that come to mind behind you, Pyrrhon Essay, books like A Fire Upon the Deep, are other books I give very high overall, but emotionally, did Pyrrhon Essay like, oh, the twist, the turn? No, but it's because there's more than it to just, you gave it still a high score. I don't want to make it
exactly.
look like you did it.
I just want
to. You wanted point to point it, that out.
Because
okay.
often it is.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, why didn't you just use emotional impact as your main overall score?
Yeah.
Things like this. I think the book is higher than just the emotional impact.
Fair. Why did you give this such a high score?
Well, I did think it was spectacular. The characters you really fall in love with. The plot has definitely some great twists and turns. You're absorbed into the world where you're really feeling at the edge of your seat. The ending was so moving. I thought it was spectacular. But I wouldn't put it at something like Pyrrhon Essay on emotional impact. I think I felt more with Pyrrhon Essay or something like Demon in White.
But you still loved it.
I still loved it. I thought it was spectacular.
Maybe bringing us into some scenes here. The book opens up with a Amar killing the prior caliphs. And so you kind of get this caliphs. So that's the first opening scene. Do you remember the first scene for you where you went, oh, I'm going to like this book? And what emotion you think the book was going for?
The first scene is with the Kindath doctor. Help out name hurts.
Kindath Jahan.
Jahan. Yep. Jahan's description of one, we're getting a cool side of her. I'm already liking the character. And then it goes into description of her father and what happened to him about how because he saw the nude form of of a lady not of his religion. He was going to be put to death, but the king had mercy and so cut out his tongue and scooped out his eyes or plucked out his eyes. And now he lives in their house forever mute and not singing. Just how it was described, just like I had this wave of emotion of, oh, it drew me in. And I felt so deeply for Jahan of her healing, and especially how it described of her still practicing medicine for the same group of people that plucked out her father's eyeballs. Anyway, that was great. It was a really moving scene and description.
And the reason this emotion's so high for me, we'll get to the ending, but the reason it's so high is because that emotion that you're talking about, where this book, Orkish Dad on the Patreon, you've heard him here before. He's
our best patron.
Best patron, of course. So Orkish was saying how the characters in this book are contrasts, where you have Amar, who is a soldier poet, and Rodrigo Belmonte. Belmonte, is it Belmonte or Belmont? Rodrigo Belmonte.
I believe it's Belmonte. Audiobook.
Belmonte. So Rodrigo Belmonte, he's a fierce soldier who everyone respects, who fears his wife or is timid around his wife. So it's these contrasts.
For good reason.
Miranda's great.
For a good reason.
She's the best.
Miranda.
Whole family's the best. We'll talk about in characters. So the contrast there, same thing with emotion. You have a scene like that with this gruesome, brutal description of her father and the story and how is that merciful. And then a scene later, a scene before, we have what I think hooked me was the charm, the fun between the characters with Alvar and the saddle straps.
Yeah.
And the little just quirkiness at the beginning where Rodrigo Belmonte, he has this company of 150 men. Alvar's the new guy in town. And Rodrigo thinks it's fun. You know, he's the new guy. You got to bully him a little bit. So he puts a saddle strap so high on Alvar's horse. So Alvar's kind of riding with his knees up above his waist and just looks awkward. And so we're kind of having a laugh. And then Jahan and Rodrigo are talking about it. And then they talk to Alvar, and Alvar is playing along. He goes, oh, would you like me to actually tighten them so they my knees could touch above the horse? And, you know, and so Rodrigo's going, wait, you knew we were playing a prank on you? And Alvar's like, yeah, of course. So it's just the fun interactions like that where I'm, oh, I love these people. So for me, it was the back and forth between that scene and then scenes like that. Where you have one scene where brutal death, the next scene, Alvar's naked fighting people. It's great. It's so fun. And so I want to skip, and then because we're talking emotions, the thing that floored me emotionally, at least, was the ending. What did you think about the ending scene and just how Guy Gavroche okay pulled this off?
I was so invested with the ending scene. He teased it with... And this is all plot of how he tricks you into basically experiencing multiple endings while giving you one that he tricks you into going like, oh, who is the one that actually died? And you learning that through hindsight and just trying to piece it together while you're reading, has you on the edge of your seat grieving the death of both men and then feeling the final grief when you find out it was Rodrigo. So that was big for me. Also, he teased us going like, oh, Alvar's doctor, you know, like doctor, like kindath doctor wife. I'm going, no,
no, don't do it, Alvar.
No, Alvar, no. Yeah. You deserve someone that puts you first. And I love Jahan, but that would be terrible if he married Jahan. Thankfully, he did not. Good. I was thankful at the end there. But
yeah.
I was on the edge of my seat, wanting to know what happened to these characters. And he teased that with the initial time when the fight scene.
Carnival.
The carnival, yep. Of teasing like, mm-hmm. Oh, who actually died? Did Rodrigo die? Yep. Did Alvar die? Did
Amar.
Amar. And then ultimately it was...
Valles
died. That was a tease and a... Basically, your what?
So wouldn't it was it wouldn't your, seem cheap at yeah, the end?
Exactly.
Exactly what Guy Gavroche said. So this is his exact quote of why he did the epilogue like this. Mm-hmm. He said, "This is him saying this." So the essence of the duel and the epilogue is this: I wanted readers to live with both possible results for a bit of time, then realize as the awareness turned that the grief was essentially equal, whichever man died. The point is that one of them had to, given where the world had gone. It was never a trick. It was embedded in the underlying idea of the novel for me. I also felt technically that this sort of device could not be first introduced at the very end. It needed to be laying in as an element of a storytelling earlier, and that is the point of the carnival scene, and when it also emerges late that it is Velez lying on the ground. That scene is what, in craft terms, allows me to echo the process in the end. There have been some readers who feel irritated and fooled, and I admit it has always startled me. This was central to the themes of the novel. That's the experience I wanted to offer.
Yeah,
perfect. Set that up. Did that. And so exactly what he's saying is why this emotion is so high for me, where the last two chapters, the last chapter than the epilogue, the last chapter in the fight between Amar and Rodrigo, not naming either of the characters and just seeing the visual, the way he set the scene. Oh my God. The way he set the scene, but then the poetry behind it. So obviously it's fantastically written, but then me going, oh my God, who's dying right now? And I did care equally about both of them to where I would almost say the ending chapter here, it was one of those moments where I stopped reading in the page and just kept rereading it because I'm like, I'm so tense right now. Let me keep reading this because I know it's going to end soon. I see there's only a few pages left in the book. Mm. I was so nervous with how he was going to end it because I'm going, wait, the war started at the very last chapters of the book. And I was nervous. Like, how do you end the book so well when you've got like 30 pages left? What is going on? And the epilogue, I felt exactly what he described here. Like, I grieve for both equally. And it just flared right in my face that, oh, this is a perfect bittersweet ending where both Amar, he lost his country culture, but ended up with Jahan in Sorenica. And Rodrigo Belmonte, he lost his life, but his sons lived on to preserve his culture in a way. And Alvar had his happy ending by going away from war and becoming a doctor. Everybody, there was a bittersweetness to everything that ended where you didn't know how to feel, but you also felt. It's great.
Same thing with Rodrigo's sons.
Yeah.
Yes, Diego survived. Great. But then you look at the brother and how Fernand, he's taking his father's shoes, and it looks like he may actually outstep his father's shadow, which is something his father was worried about. But there's an edge to him that even his mother is nervous of. And it's a questioning of, like, how he will develop as a man and, like, that rage in him that he'll never really get over. That's the scene of seeing his father crying over his brother's body. And so even that is bittersweet.
Yeah. Man, it's geniusly put together. We're talking about Belmont, but it's actually his son. And I loved it. Loved it. I wanted to ask you, too. I had this question here for you. For the ending battle, who are you rooting for if you had to pick?
I was rooting for Rodrigo.
Oh, Rodrigo.
I loved Rodrigo.
Because of the family?
Yeah. I loved his family. Yeah. It was great. Yeah. I liked Amar, but I didn't like him as much as Rodrigo. I also just, the personality I fell in love with more.
And he had more to lose.
Yeah.
He had a family with him. So
yeah, exactly.
What Amar had to lose was ending up with Jahan. And a future family too. But mm-hmm. at the time, it was, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you want to talk about anything else for emotions?
Let's see. Were there any other kind of shocking emotional scenes for you? Because we talked about basically the beginning and the end. Was anything in the middle?
Yeah, the fun emotion. So talking about the saddle shots, but the Elvar naked scene.
Yeah. Like,
that to me was just absurd in a funny way. And I think
the ambush in the valley.
The ambush, yeah.
That was a really funny, action-packed scene. I was enjoying myself with it.
Absolutely. And for context,
basically, Amar and Rodrigo found a way to steal the gold that's being transported by this group of soldiers, where they seed information to a bandit group. So they're watching as this army is getting ambushed. And to make sure the ambush actually goes through, Jahan is sitting on a ridgeline, basically shouting these obscenities into the army, embarrassing him, and which throws him off his game of him going like, I'm just going to charge through the ambush. And he was really funny. And
which would totally work on the Folly of Man. It would work on the Folly of Richard, I think.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, no.
Like, play, insulting play my honor. Honor.
Play to my ego.
Go full Zuko.
Honor. Well, now, it's interesting because there's also something of he was not, it's not like he made the completely wrong move, because he did realize, like, oh, there are people behind me. Like, there are people behind and there are people in front. Who do we go after? And so, because we know the trap is in front of us, we should be able to get past it. But again, he wasn't thinking properly. But it wasn't, it was the wrong move, but it wasn't obviously wrong.
It wasn't illogical.
Yes.
It wasn't just like, I'm going to go. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't ridiculous, which was good.
Want to go to thought provokingness?
Sure.
What'd you give that out of 5 stars?
I gave this a 4.25. I thought it was really great.
I gave it 4.5, spectacular for thought provokingness. We're close.
Yep.
Let's see if we can get, maybe we average this at a 4.33 or something. We'll find a way. Sure. So why a 4.25? Why did you think it was really great? What was the theme, actually? What was the theme and the message?
I mean, I think the theme is basically on how different cultures, despite their backgrounds, can work together. At least the very hope of it, that there is hope in fundamentally different cultures and groups finding a way to work together. And then also dealing with the themes of what actually is the consequence of war, the people that are left behind, the types of oppression. There's a lot. There's a lot covered. Yeah. The nature of love, really, what even is it? There's a bunch. Forgiveness. Oh, jeez.
I mean, love, too. It's your duties and what makes you a person. Your love of country, love of family, love of religion. What drives you?
Love of individual, love of a friend.
Love of self. Not as much.
Amar loves himself.
He loves his poetry.
He loves himself. Yeah. Amar could not, like... Amar loves Amar.
And Jahan.
Yes. Before Jahan, who did Amar love
Just
the most?
Just himself, you know? He doesn't believe in God, he believes in himself, you know?
He does.
But that... So for you, the duty, the sacrifice, what the ending for you, what was the end message Guy Gavriel K was saying? What do you think his theme was like? Hey, here's what I want to point out. Want me to postulate something?
You shoot first, because I think there's a lot. I'm trying to think of, is there a central theme?
I think the central theme is this idea of, so... seeing two sides of a war, and we actually get the extremes as well. We see the French analog comes in and is starting to do a crusade, essentially, to whatever that area is called in this world. And so we also see the Majid from the south. Is it the Majid? I might be saying the name wrong. But we see in the south the extremes of both ends, or the fundamentalists of both ends of the spectrum. And then we see on the area of Al-Rusan and Esperanza, we have the different cultures, and we have kind of a mixture of both the Christian analogs, the Jedites, and Ashrites, the Muslim analogs. And so we're seeing all the different perspectives. And now we have Amar and we have Rodrigo, are two sides that aren't part of the fundamentalists of each side, but they kind of get put in the spot where their cultures, their societies are different. But we see throughout the book how they could become best of friends. Like, these two people are alike. They are respected. I can't believe we forgot to mention the duel scene, which we could talk more about the plot. But the initial duel scene where they both meet each other and take on five guys, and they bro up. This is like, okay.
Oh no!
You know when you look at a man and you respect them. I haven't had that in a while since being in this podcaster. But you know when you look at a man and you respect the hell out of him.
He's like, did we just become best friends?
Exactly. Yeah. You have the what's the Full Metal Alchemist thing?
General Armstrong, respectable muscles. Yeah.
So you had that scene with them, but you see how these two people on opposite sides would otherwise, in a different world, be best of friends. But what their values come down to, they valued something more than just a guy you could sit. It happens in modern day war. I bet in Iraq, there's soldiers who talked about how the people they killed, what if they were at a bar with them and said they would probably just had a drink? But their societies are in a clash. They're at war. And so it changes you and your priorities. And for Rodrigo, it was family in Esperanza. And for Amar, it was... I'm not saying the name super popularly, but Cartada and Al-Rasan, essentially. So
basically, his culture and history, and ultimately his people.
Yes.
What was what he valued even more so than the individual of Rodrigo or even Jahan. He put his country and his culture above others.
Well, that's the big message I got of it. Do you think that was a major theme, that there's more to it there? But I think that is the main point of the book.
The hierarchy of love, and just the idea that you can love many things, but ultimately something has to take the top spot.
Right.
And there's not – none of them are inherently right or wrong. It's kind of just an inevitable tragedy that ultimately – something nothing's free. You have to sacrifice something. To love Rodrigo as a brother, he has to sacrifice his culture. He has to sacrifice his country. Same thing with Rodrigo. To sacrifice his love of country, he would have to sacrifice his family. It's something has to come out on top.
Yes, I think that. So for our ratings, and not to go the number wise, but why didn't you give it the 5? Just why, you know, why not better? It's just you've seen better examples. Wasn't super. I'm saying this only because we're going to be praising this book a lot. Yeah. So is there anything that could have been done better? Maybe is there something you wanted more to make it more compelling? Because you said at the beginning, one of your least favorite parts was the least best part was thought provokingness. What would you have liked to see?
I guess I would have liked a little deeper or a little bit more questioning. I don't know. Ultimately, it being left up to just showing you different types of love and the hierarchy, that love of country, love of family, love of self, love of what have you, love of religion. I would have liked more or go in depth. Ultimately, I don't have as many questions as I would in a Piranesi. I don't think there's multiple avenues you can really take this, really. I don't think there's that multitude of answers. It just kind of lets you sit there with it. And there's not really a right answer. There's not really a wrong answer. I don't think there's really multiple interpretations. It's just a tragedy of life. And that's kind of where it is. Do you get what I mean?
I get what you mean.
It's good to think about. I think it's interesting, but I'm not.
Your life hasn't changed.
Yeah, I guess so.
So as part of my thinking as well behind this book, because the themes are done like masterfully, it's part of the themes and the message here. It's you can have a simple theme or something that is less, I guess, quote-unquote complex. So sure, Piranesi makes me think in a lot more different directions. Credit to this, then I'll get onto your point. But credit to it is, even if it's simply done, I think it something could be done so well that it's your example. It's like, this book is why I think this way. This book is why it doubled down my idea of why war and why duty and why this. So I a slight mix of what you said there, but to add on to that, to your point of, I had a note here of why I didn't like floor me is I would have liked to see more of like a Mars inner toil. It's part turmoil and something more of like how difficult the choice was, where it happened toward the end, where the message was clearly there. But if I was seeing inside their heads just more and more and more and going like, what, more of what the theme was, more of what the message, to make it more compelling, I guess. It's still spectacular, but I feel like we had to say something.
I would agree with you. Personally, I really like, one of the reasons I like Rodrigo more than Amar is I think we get a lot more of Rodrigo's struggle.
Yeah.
To the same degree, I think I would have liked more, but to him, I don't think it was a struggle. He like always put his family first.
Let's go write the characters everything. Then. And continue right at that point. What did you give characters out of 5 stars?
Character gave a 4.75.
I gave 4.5. So there we go. Spectacular for me. Like nearly floored you. What? So go on to that with the Amar versus Rodrigo. Because you're starting with a complaint here. Then we'll get to...
Basically, I really liked Amar. I thought he... Fun character.
Yeah.
Definitely well actualized. But there's a little bit of... Some of the relation, I bought his relationship with Rodrigo quite a lot. I did not see his relationship with Jahan as clearly as I saw it with Rodrigo.
Okay.
And so for me, that kind of came out of nowhere. I guess not nowhere, but I don't know. I was kind of confused on that position. But overall, I enjoyed those characters. Rodrigo always put his family first. The family dynamic he has with his wife, amazing, with his kids, great. And even the struggle that he has with Jahan, of clearly loving Jahan, but ultimately making the choice of, like, I love my wife. I'm not going to sacrifice that. Because, so, again, a choice between loves, and he makes a choice. So
I think his choice is also more well done. Even Mars, fantastic. Okay, we're comparing two great characters. Where Rodrigo compelled me even more. I think he was my favorite character. No, Miranda, his wife, was also this is just amazing. but just keeping, we'll go mains and then we could go side. But what Rodrigo, why maybe it hit for us even more, is his decision at the end made a ton of sense as well, because we saw his relationship with Amar also made sense, but his relationship with Amar and the buildup we see his exile. We still see when he's being exiled, there's a pivotal scene that defines part of his personality. We see his relationship with his wife, but then when he's being exiled and his wife and his kids were being attacked, and so he's coming back to after the pariahs and the burning in the place that started with Orville, was it? Orvilla, where that burning happened. So he's coming back, and because of him punishing one of the Dorada cousins, that cousin to the whatever the term is, but he essentially let the guy get killed. One of the guy gets killed, the other guy, he gave him a beating, or et cetera. So he comes back and he has to get exiled for 2 years. And the pivotal scene for me was when he was sitting there and the king ordered the Dorada to take care of his family.
And if his family was ever killed,
then Dorada would also die. That's the show. Dorada must make this oath to protect your family while you're gone, or else Dorada will be executed. And so Rodrigo's response to that was, okay, let's change that oath a little bit, because we should change that oath to not just if my family dies, because then people could target my family and kill a very important member of the royal court, et cetera, Dorada. So let's alter that a bit so that he doesn't just die if my family gets killed and it's not his fault, type of thing. Kind of showing for Rodrigo his duty of like country and Esperanza, and like he cared that much about
country. Like, he does care that much about country, but I think equally is he's a smart tactician of realizing that if someone wanted to hurt his country, mm-hmm. and they wanted to go after the last remaining key military figure, if you wanted to go after Dorada, you go after Rodrigo's family. Like, that's the easy one. That's the easier assassination, and you basically kill him. So he's trying to make his family less of
even
a threat.
Safer too.
Yeah. So part of it is
like love of family and country.
Yeah.
So he obviously prioritizes those over Amar. Even when he meets Amar, there's just this magnetic, like, oh, I love them. Mm-hmm. But so for you then, with these two characters, Rodrigo and Amar, what made them different enough but the same?
Amar is kind of the more I think about it, Amar started off being very aimless. He has been, like, him killing the last caliph, and kind of how he has been ostracized even with his own country, of people kind of fearing him. He's the king assassinator.
Yeah.
King equivalent. And then he assassinates his only friend that he considers for the sake of the country. And ultimately then the son that he assassinated the king for, exile.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Awesome. And now he just doesn't even have his country. He doesn't have anything. He doesn't, even his cultural's main religion considers him a pariah and a heretic. And so he has nothing and no one. He's so aimless. And so him trying to find a reason to be, though ultimately, if you look back on it, all of his major decisions comes down to what's good for what he believes is good for his country. He killed the last caliph because he thought that would be the right thing for his country. Mm-hmm. Killed the Amalik the First, his best friend, for the sake of his country. Mainly because Amalik the First did this horrible massacre of the Day of the Moat. And he's like, Tyrant, like, can't have this. Yeah. Can't have this kind of king. And he's no longer fit to be king and kills him. And then at the end, when he fights against Rodrigo, he does that for the sake of his country. Like, ultimately, that's what it comes down to. He loves his country and his history and his people.
So, and the difference with Robert, you see that Rodrigo has a similar, they have similar loves, and they gained respect in their respective countries because of who they were, who they grew up to be, and the respect that they did have. But then it divulged a bit because of Mars, this bachelor, secular, Rodrigo's this family man with a wife who is just Miranda. I'm saying that correctly, Miranda, and then the kids Diego and Fernan.
The family was the best. But
that intro scene to the family.
Oh, yeah. But no, Amar is a very interesting character. And don't want to forget about Jahan.
Yes, Jahan.
As a main character, the character I enjoyed following the most. I think I enjoyed Jahan the most.
Okay.
I think I enjoyed her plot line.
Okay.
You get kind of going to mean of where I think we're in her head a bit more often.
Yeah.
We get to see her perspective. I enjoyed following her. But Rodrigo, as a character, he's just dynamic. He's kind of the hero. he is one of those greats, you know, the great sword fighter, father, family man. He's larger than life.
Yeah.
Where we see a lot more inside of Alvar's head and Jahan's. And I think I enjoyed both of their stories quite a bit. I enjoyed that we followed in their heads more.
Yeah, with Jahan's story, her start was really interesting because she started off wanting some vengeance. She started off going, okay, they did this to my father. She was, the day of the moat happened, and she was starting to go for some vengeance. Said to herself she wanted to kill King Amalek. And Amar comes back and is like, oh, he already did it. And so Jahan's now her initial, where we think the inciting incident's happening with Jahan is, oh, okay, wants to do this revenge. How's this doctor going to? Oh, no. Already dead. Now what?
Yeah.
Vengeance isn't an option. And she's a 28-year-old woman, which especially at the time is old. And I hope 28 isn't old soon because we're getting there, Rich.
Getting close.
Can you believe that we're saying 28 and old? When you start watching college sports and you go, look at those youngsters, it starts to get to you, doesn't it?
We're young, but I see it. I see it coming.
Crippling back pain is really an issue in your mid-20s. That's what I've found.
Yeah. That's not good. No. I already have, like, minor back pain. That's not good.
not a great place
to start.
So, with Jahan, then, her story, her arc, what did you love about hers and where she ended up with Amar?
So I loved her story as her being a doctor trying to follow in her father's footsteps of how much she looks up to her father and then going beyond. But ultimately, I found very interesting in this story that ultimately Jahan never really surpasses her father as a doctor. Like, her father, even blind and mute.
I mean, you can't stop him.
Blind and mute, he performs brain surgery.
Oh.
And just like forever in all history, his actions will be forever remembered.
He is the Michael Jackson of doctors.
Of surgeons.
Okay, surgeons.
Surgeons. Which is interesting. Yeah. You know, like, Jahan's not like on a path of glory of being the most well-respected doctor. That's not her journey. She's kind of like Amar, of like, what's her purpose? She kind of struggles with that quite a bit. She knows she's a doctor, but then what exactly is her place?
In a way, she's a Kendoth, the analog for the Jews, has no place left. Goes to Ragosa because it's the one place she can kind of, Mazur ben Avren, who's the other Kendoth. Ragosa is somewhat of a safe zone for these religions. And she doesn't really have a home of her own, so maybe her lesson by the end is having a family of her own, going off back to Serenica and going like, okay, I now have something I've been missing in my life.
I think that's been, if thinking about it, it makes more sense of why she loves Amar or why they work together. They're both kind of wanderers in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Especially with her of being a Kindath, but also not really secular. She's a secular Kindath rather than fundamentalist, you know, and same thing with Amar being as far secular as you possibly can. for his religion. So
see what you mean. Okay.
But I was surprised.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts when the whole scene of she is about to go up to Rodrigo's room during the carnival, but ultimately decides like, no, I'm not, and she goes finds Amar. What did you think of that whole scene?
Yeah, I think it makes sense, and the build up between Jahan and Amar, where I think what Jahan was struggling with in her head, it's this bit of a love triangle, right?
Yeah.
But you have Jahan in her head. When she's first introduced to Rodrigo and first introduced to Amar, she has a scene with them. With Rodrigo is on the horse to peck on the kiss on the cheek, flipping that. But then with Amar, when he came into the room, got her dad to talk for the first time, and gave a kiss there. And later on, we're reflecting back to this scene when they're in Ragosa, and Amar's been writing for her father, and you see kind of in the background her thinking about either Amar or thinking about Rodrigo. And throughout the text, it just looked like she had to come to terms with Rodrigo's a married man, not an option. And although they both have this presence that any woman would just fall in love with. I mean, you're not choosing wrong with Rodrigo or Amar.
You're not. Yeah.
Alvaro, you just got to invest in him. You just got to wait, let him get there. Okay. We all have our face. but he was the best boy since the beginning. That's besides the point. But I liked it because she couldn't end up with Rodrigo. The story it had to go that direction. So
one, I think it was definitely she's not a selfish person, really. And so her making the decision of, yeah, she may love Rodrigo, but ultimately she loves him, cares about him, and realizes and knows how much he cares about his wife. And for her to come in to break that would hurt him. And ultimately, why would she ever want to hurt him that way?
Yeah.
So her kind of going like, yes, I may love him, but ultimately she's not that selfish to break up a family.
No.
Because of that. So other option is Amar, who she also loves, but different. He's an option available, and also all the things that he has done for her father, not only like got him to speak and talk again, and also keeps writing him letters and gets him to communicate, but also took revenge for her. Like in a way, like he's the she went out to kill Amalik the first, and he did it for her. So he accomplished the great revenge that she always wanted. So, and also, he's charming.
Yeah.
Charming, hot, cool guy. Like, ultimately, yeah.
And there's, you know, that. Who she ignored the whole time? In today's society, it's still the same. Alvar. The nice guy who just wants a nice girl. You know?
Hey, ultimately, here, Alvar's not the nice. Thankfully, like, I think Alvar was done in a good light of, he's kind of a simp, pretty much.
It's the love at first sight. It's the young love. We've all been there. It's very relatable. Yeah.
But also, ultimately, he kind of moves on. You know, like,
he loves her for the whole book, really, until it starts to get to the end and we see the epilogue. But he recognizes by the end that it's not an option.
Yeah, he cares for her, and ultimately in a different way now, especially because she has shown him a new path in life and loves her for that, especially. Right. So it's not just a boy loves girl. It's he admired her greatly, that it was able to change his life and to go from a soldier to a doctor.
Yeah.
That's an important thing. That's of course, love. That's love. Yeah. So he loves her for those reasons.
Her example,
as well.
She said.
Yeah. He admired her. Yeah. This is the big one. So ultimately, Amar moving on, I was very happy that he was just not just puppy love the entire time and just sidestepped and good. But
what did you, so to rat off some of the other characters, if you want to stop me and talk about them, you have Count Gonzalez de Rada, you have Miranda Fernan, Diego. We'll talk about them briefly. Just say the first scene with them. There's two big scenes of why I think we fall in love so quickly with them. One of the scenes when they're getting attacked by the Dorada coming up from the Pariahs failing, and so they're coming up, and the family just as a unit, the kids are working together. Miranda, they're underestimated, and they work as a team to take down the Dorada.
I love, especially Miranda remembering back to how Rodrigo put it, of like, hey, if any trouble comes, like, the boys will handle. The boys are going to be, the boys are fine. I trust the boys.
They're back in town.
The boys are back. Just trust the boys.
Yeah.
The boys got this. It's just like, God damn it, Rodrigo. Damn you. And ultimately, he's right. The boys do got this.
Yeah.
Like, they had it handled. They
did.
They got it. And yet she's like, she's still, God damn it, Rodrigo, you left us.
Yeah, true.
Anyway.
That, so the thing also, about her, the Belmont family.
Yeah, also her analysis of going like, Rodrigo was here. He, like, one, this guy is a threat. And if we let him go, he's going to try and kill us again. Rodrigo ultimately,
her decision,
her tie to it is he wouldn't be able to kill him. But because I'm a woman and I can't be held responsible for my decisions because, haha.
Defenseless.
I'm a defenseless woman. They they won't punish me.
Dead.
Kill him. Like, taking out the threat. You're a threat to my family. Uh-uh.
Which is why.
And I love Rodrigo going like, thank Christ. Thank Christ I wasn't there. Because, oh, good.
Could have been bad.
Could have been bad if I was there.
The element of utter hyper-competence of everybody involved. The family. Rodrigo and his family being hyper-competent to where the next scene where Rodrigo comes up to see his family and he's going through and he's noticing that he's about to be put in a trap by his own family. Family does it, gets him good, ties him up, and they're like, how'd you know? Because Rodrigo's like, hey, it was good, boys. You did a good job. I almost didn't catch you. The boys are like, oh, darn.
Darn
it, daddy. And then Miranda's, they try, but it's just showing how Rodrigo's smart enough to know he's being ambushed. And they're smart enough to put an ambush where they're toying around with their dad, trying to be caught less. So his dad was going through like the list of things that he noticed and they were trying to get better. Like,
It was a lesson.
It was a lesson. Ultimately, because they're getting better.
Why are the boys so competent by the end?
Because like, they always
Rodrigo is a great father.
Yes. He's always showing them how to improve. Mm-hmm. And then that's where we have a sex scene with Miranda and him, and the two big ones with Alvar and Miranda and him. There's others too. But what I even love about that scene with the characters is it's not just a sex scene. It's also showing Miranda and his dynamic and how Miranda's character of having a bit more pants, just their relationship. We see why Rodrigo and her both work, but also she has just as much who marries the man that 150 men respect and is El Rasan's. He has a nickname, whatever the nickname is.
The scourge of El Rasan. Yeah.
Who marries him? But a hyper competent, strong woman. I mean, who else could tame that man?
Yeah.
Right.
And even then, it's often you kind of see the play, like if the woman is like really strong, it's, you know, strong, independent, all this, that it's the man who loves the woman more, and the woman's like, I'll let you love me. It's, I don't know, there's an interesting paradigm in this one. They both equally love each other fiercely and are jealous of each other.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? They have that. I love the line of her saying, repeat what I told you when you go off on campaign. If her telling you, like, you ever lay with another woman, the deal is, if you ever lay with another woman, I'm going to do one of two things. I'm either going to sleep with another man or I'm going to kill you. And I don't want to sleep with another man. So those are your options here.
That was great.
And she's like,
that was great.
She only wants him. Yep. And it's just fiercely protected.
Yep. Oh, we knew it would happen. Let's see if it happens once more in the video. We almost had it. But yes, that scene, and she's mentioning, like, I noticed there was a doctor you're going with that meeting in Ragosa too. That's strange. That's coincidental.
You mentioned her blue eyes and really your great details.
I heard she was beautiful. Is that true? Like, every guy's been there, like, babe, I swear.
Him going, like, her going, man, you noticed quite a few details about her too.
That's
you
strange.
Really remember all of her features. And you're going, I'm trained to notice these features about both men and women. That's why I'm a competent general and all these things. Like, sure.
Convenient.
Likely story.
So spectacular characters. Yeah. And it's tough to do. I thought it would be tough to do for me to fall in love with them so much for the writing style.
Sure.
Because it's tough to make you fall in love when it's omniscient point of view. Like, it seems almost like distant writing, but it's not. Which we'll get into.
Hey, to be fair, Ken Liu did a great job with like Kinemaru. I fell in love with Kinemaru.
Like, he's good. I would even, but even with Ken Liu, like, I don't love those characters. They're not that. They're good. They're good. They're really good characters. But
that's
like
fair.
This,
I was. I had more fun with Kigaru.
Yes,
like he was entertaining as hell. I really loved the character because of how entertaining
the and things just, he did.
His charisma was fun to follow. With Rodrigo, like, love Rodrigo. I love Jahan. Like, I want what's best for them.
Yeah. Plot time.
Yep.
Unless you got anything else with character. Okay. No. Plot, would you give that out of 5 stars?
Plot, I gave a 4.5. I thought it was spectacular. Spectacular plot.
This is my first 5-star. It floored me. Plot was my favorite part of this book.
Is it that ending?
It's before that ending. It was like a 4-star part. Great. Great plot. I will always look back at this book as just how, what would I do? Because when we're judging plot, when I'm judging plot two, and this just, is there very few changes or a lot of changes that I would make, like as if I could do better? Just like, I can't think of maybe a pace thing, like middle, because the middle was, had more point of views going on where we saw in the north, we saw in the south. So it was building up to this battle that was ensuing. So I could see maybe some people would see it as more boring, but I saw this as a thrilling slow burn where everything was just boiling to this big moment, and it all relies on that ending. That,
oh yeah, I really enjoyed even the smaller portions of how much that there are so many of these different scenes and POVs that were not necessarily on a surface level. You think, oh, this is just for the plot. It could have been just for the plot.
Yeah.
But for example, of the king.
King Ramiro in the north?
Yep, King Ramiro
and his queen Inés.
Yep.
Shout out to Inés, our patron.
Hey!
Same name as Queen Inés in the book. Hey. Oh, Inés also loved this book. So shout out Inés.
She loved this. And in Spain,
yes.
And she showed us cool pictures of the statues that are, these characters are based off of these real historical figures.
Yeah. Awesome.
Super cool. Great pictures.
But King Ramiro and Queen Inés.
How much their plot line was specifically, like, it's for the plot, sure, but I loved the character interaction. So, one, it gave me, all of their scenes went toward building the world of showing me the different cultures and religions. Mm-hmm. It showed me more about the actual country on why they would actually go to war, what's their reasoning, then really fell in love with the characters, of their dynamic was just heartwarming. And like, you think it's one way and then it changes and shifts and you see their growing love and respect for each other. Wonderful. And then of course the plot, like how much the different plots of trying to assassinate the king or assassinate, they actually were trying to assassinate the wife to make the kings go after each other.
Yep.
How the Kindath actually helped in that, in that aspect, why they would be more favorite, why this king particularly would actually be more accepting of the Kindath, which is a very important aspect of this whole story. Mm-hmm. Everything about it. And I think, what, we get 2 POV chapters from them?
Oh, yeah.
Basically?
A couple. Some,
like, not many.
Not a lot.
Not a lot at all. I got so much out of it.
Yeah.
And that was the same for basically the entire story. Every POV did not just... Nothing was just for the plot. Nothing was just for a character emotional moment. It all was well integrated.
Yeah, well said, because this thing floored me, where you also had the likewise in Ragosa with King Baedir and Mazur Ben Afrin. We didn't even touch, we can't touch on all these characters because there's a ton. But Mazur had, like, his sacrifice at the end was very cool to see, even his
also
perspective.
Also, makes you hate the character that made him do it. But
Yeah. And so that... It almost fell again. Oh no! So that those side portions are in the middle of the book, but the promise, the beginning of this book, he's looking at this as promise, progress, payoff. The beginning of the book with all the point of views. One of my favorite tropes in stories are point of views connecting and coming together. And right from the get go, we see how Rodrigo, Amar, Jahan, and Alvar under Rodrigo all get banished or exiled or leave in their different ways to meet in Ragosa. And we have this, the scene we talked about with Amar and Rodrigo, but we see the inciting incidents for them, the end of act one, all meeting in Ragosa. And then this cooking, boiling, slow burn, where we get perspectives from across the land, across El Rosan, España, and I think the way that he does this, where we talked about this earlier as well, of how he foreshadows the ending and making it not look like he's fooling you, but properly setting everything up to where that fight scene at the end, the duel and the epilogue was so perfectly done for me, of how I grieved for both people. I cared so deeply. There's no other. I love the way he ended this book, and it was just a perfect bow tie to a perfectly constructed plot. And it doesn't even have to be perfect in that way. Just it floored me. And I love how he did it. But that, to me, I'm just looking at this going, wow.
Would you still give it a 5 without the epilogue?
No.
It ended with just the duel.
So more of an ambiguous ending.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Probably a very high 4, like 4.75. I'd like to think, because the epilogue added on to it, but I think the last chapter, that duel, and the epilogue, those two portions at the end, just put a perfect bow tie on it together. Mm-hmm. But even the duel itself, like that was also a flooring scene. But to me, when you have multiple things that just bang, bang, I mean, I loved it. But
it made it a very satisfying ending.
It did. The way the book left you, my favorite types of endings, my favorite types of plots as well that this perfectly does is bittersweet. We touched on that before, of a bittersweet ending. But the way that I was both, every character, every family or dynamic in a way, has a way that where when the book closes, and this isn't just world stuff with the plot, when the book closes, the plot lives on in a way. Like those characters live on in a way because everybody ended with something tragic, but also something positive, or at least in Rodrigo's case, something.
Well,
tragic.
And thing is, with Rodrigo, we definitely get a few aspects of him talking about his children and his worry of his children ever outstepping a shadow. And we find out they actually have. They've become their own men. Great men in their own right beyond their father.
Yeah.
Or at least hopeful that they could surpass their father. Like Rodrigo's hope was basically realized.
And Rodrigo's hope is
even though he died, he accomplished some of the things that he was most worried about in this book.
And so, Rodrigo's hope and his legacy is a modern and his culture's detriment. It's just everything has a pro. It's just, love it. What did you, love the same things or did you see something different in it?
No, I loved it. I thought it was spectacular. The reason why I'm not giving it maybe the 5 out of 5 floor.
Blasphemous.
I know.
Or are you a Kindaf? No. Like anybody around is like, what?
What?
What side are you on?
Dirty, filthy Kindaf. I was like, oh Lord.
Anybody who's called for a future videos, like no one will get it. It's just we make these awful racist jokes. It's just like forget.
Oh God. Anyway. While I enjoyed the book, it wasn't so much a patron. I could very easily put the book down. It wasn't
fair. Yeah,
I enjoyed every chapter, but not always grabbing at all times. Like by the time it closed, really complete picture, which I thought was spectacular. But yeah, the middle maybe could have paced a little different, but honestly, it's not much. It's just honestly, it was a personal enjoyment aspect, and so it's still spectacular.
Yeah,
but. It's that feeling.
I reflected that middle portion of like, you know, not being paged or type thing, that more of my emotion of why I didn't give it the 5 floored for this. I would say, you know, here's my perspective on both Red Rising and El Rosan. Red Rising is that page turner, everything. I love the pace of it. Floored me plot. Likewise, this is just a slow cooking. It's like this. It's either are you having... there's a place for the best fast food. There's a place for like, oh, I want a Five Guys right now. And that's top tier Five Guys. And then there's a place for a 6-hour slowed cooked pork loin with onions and potatoes, a little carrots and
you
celery.
Would say that best 6-hour slow cooked pork loin is equivalent to a Five Guys burger.
Yeah.
This is why people don't trust you.
This is why when you come for my taste here, I have...
Everyone's confused.
No, it's just I like the good things. Other people like good and bad things. So it's different. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's different. But I will stand by. See, look, to me, there is a five-star, there's a five-star Pixar film for kids, and there's a five-star pretentious Oscar film for adults. I think there's a five-star for everybody. That's just me. But
everyone's a five-star. No one's a five-star.
No, Red Rising and this are on different levels. I mean,
Red Rising's so much better.
So that is that for you. Would you have preferred an ambiguous ending for this book or
no? Okay. I love this ending. Okay. It made it spectacular, not just really great.
Okay, very fair. Do you want to move on to world building then?
Yeah.
What'd you give the world out of 5 stars?
4.25.
Likewise.
There we go.
So why'd you give it really great?
That was really great because it immersed you into the world perfectly well. I was absorbed into it. The fantasy aspects were not much of a draw. Like it's medieval Spain with two moons, and the twins have somewhat a mystical power, but it's not really that relevant to the story as a whole. So overall, not much fantasy, but it absorbed me into that world, made me interested in these characters. That's what a world's supposed to do.
We're talking
to come alive.
World. We're just talking immersion.
Immersion, the culture,
the setting,
yeah.
Atmosphere.
All that was really great.
Atmosphere. It was top tier in that the atmosphere makes you feel like this is actually medieval Spain, historical fiction. This is where I want to shout out Anais with this, where Anais told us. So Anais is Spanish, and she said it's called Esperanza. Let me double check if I have the name exactly right. Esperanza. So it's called that because in Spanish, Esperanza means hope, and Esperanza means hope, and España is Spain. So Guy Gavriel K made the word Esperanza.
To be fair, this is a speculation. This is not confirmed. This is just her speculation, but I think it's a good speculation.
I love the speculation.
Want to be
careful. Very clear. Yes.
It's not like we got this from an interview with Guy Gavriel K. I'm like, yeah, this is what it means.
Anais is just as reliable of a source. I trust. So the word Spain plus hope is Esperanza. That's why it's called Esperanza here. Just to shout that out quickly. But for why it's really great, the atmosphere sets you in the mood of the world. It feels very consistent. The different places too, like Ragosa, Cartada, Fasana. All those different cities, I liked how some of them came to life a bit. I guess why it's not a flooring world, maybe you'll agree with this, is the places don't seem extremely different. Like, Esperanza versus El Rosan, you know, you could kind of typecast it with, okay, here's the Muslim analog here, Christian analog, the French analog here. So you could very much put the character into the character made sense in the world, but sometimes the places were those mixed together at times. I didn't see Ragosa differently than Esteren or Ragosa, like extremely. They were good. They're really good, but more so I think what I liked about it was the atmosphere it brought, the setting that, man, this is just, it feels like I'm in medieval Spain right now, and that's a damn tough thing to do with a tone because other worse authors could screw that up pretty easily. Would you agree with all that, or would you throw in a caveat?
No. That completely your way.
Okay.
The cities were really good, but I wouldn't say floored in the sense that each city had their own unique feel. Now, maybe they're not all supposed to be so drastically different. I mean, it is roughly
similar
geographical location, but yeah. I would say so.
I liked how the governments were very different. Like, you saw a lot of that goes into the character work, though, just seeing how Mazur and
the kings
worked.
Different.
So
yeah.
that worked really well. And we talked about this enough, but the Kindath Hesherites, Jadites being analogs for Jewish, Muslims, Christians, so we don't need to rehash that.
Maybe a possible negative quality, it depends on how you're looking at this book and what you actually really wanted out of it, is this book doesn't really go into the differences between the Kindath, the Asherites, and the
Jadites.
It basically, this book really leans into, hey, do you know a little bit of history about the animosity or the differences between the Muslims, Christians, and the Jews? You kind of need that, because this book just basically posits like these groups, very different, don't like each other. Go forth. but it doesn't explain why. Maybe that's a negative to it. Maybe it doesn't matter as much. I think for the book itself, it stays above. It doesn't really go into the religious differences. It just says, like, they are different groups and leaves it at that.
Yeah, Guy Gavriel's K's part, I don't think world was his main focus with this. And also, fair assumption that people know what Muslims, Christians, and Jews are. Just like, you know, a book wouldn't go and describe, like, here's how the sun works. Here's how light shines down. Fair assumption with some things where you're totally right. You definitely need real-world context to kind of understand if this is an analog for whichever religious group. Though, for the story, for the themes he's going for, doesn't need to happen. But for judging world, you're right. Like, okay, it's analog. Got it. Really, the atmosphere setting, did that do it for you? And it looks like it still did.
Yeah, it still worked. Yeah. So,
awesome.
I don't know if that's particularly a negative or not for me. It's just something worth mentioning.
It is, because when we reviewed American Gods, that was our previous book club, actually. American Gods is just taking place in America. It made America feel so real and alive the way it was described. I'll almost say, like, you could still have a real world area, like this is in medieval Spain, be just as immersive as an epic fantasy over there. But fair complaints, but also fairly very a really great world
that treats the religion far more like a plot device rather than a focus that gives you details about the world.
Yeah, it's not supposed to in this. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So that's world building. Last category time.
Yep.
Prose. Is this your first 5-star?
It is. 5 stars.
It floored you?
Floored me. Prose. It, when people talk about, oh, this really is a Guy Gavriel Case style book. Like, he has his own style that other people definitely try to emulate. And the fact that his writing has influenced so many other famous authors today, that it's their inspiration and some of their Guy Gavriel Kay is the favorite author of so many other famous authors.
Do you know some of them by chance? I know Nicholas Eames we talked to.
Nicholas Eames. We know Brandon Sanderson talked to. We have, Ken Liu, we were talking to him specifically. He was like, this is one of my inspirations.
Yeah.
It's Guy Gavriel Kay. The amount of people that I know, Robin Hobb loves Guy Gavriel Kay. Yep. Like, you go down the list.
That's awesome.
Most authors love Guy Gavriel Kay.
It's,
well, I guess, caveat, fantasy sci-fi authors.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different types of authors out there. Not everyone is there here. But for fantasy sci-fi authors, Guy Gavriel Kay is the legend.
Yeah.
I understand why.
I teetered back and forth. I gave this a 4.75 out of 5 stars. Absolutely spectacular prose. I teetered back and forth between the 5 and this for a personal preference of the prose would floor me in many ways. The poetry of it, the scene at the end. I know we've talked about it so much, but the tension he was able to build, also his kind of style, which we can discuss here. We talked a lot about it a lot, and this was Levy's point. The Al-Rassan hater, Levy. We were talking about this a lot, and we had an agent, Kendall, as part of our Patreon as well. We were diving deep into how his prose in 1995 is very different than modern prose, obviously, where he uses a lot of passive voice, or had been. And Levy made a fun paragraph here that I can read off that is Guy Gavriel Kay-esque. So this is him making fun of the prose. He says, Austin, who was, of course, the same man who had spoken to Richard all those years ago and founded the great Rambler Empire, the same empire that, naturally, shifted the paradigm of booktube content, yet he was not, in many ways, still that same man. Which is a good parody.
It's pretty good parody.
It's a good parody. And I totally get why if somebody wouldn't be someone's style of prose. I think when we're rating prose, we're seeing how irreplaceable is it. How much of a unique author's voice and style. He clearly has that. Despite what we were discussing in the book club with Kendall, there would be things in, if this was submitted in modern day and he was a first-time author, like you didn't know the Guy Gavriel Kay portion, some people don't like reading things like had been, or a lot of gerunds with ing. So for example, also some repetition of words. He does it more for a purpose, and there's a point to it. But for example, here's in the very last paragraph, there's a sentence, I actually wrote it here so I can read it off. The line says, "It fell upon the water and the small quick fish in the water." you know, it could sound awkward to some, like, ah, okay, maybe get rid of one of those waters. Don't repeat water than water. But it's not like he didn't overlook that. He knows what he's doing. It is a, is it your kind? So the couple things when writing prose, how much of an author's voice, inspirational, et cetera, but also, is it done well to your liking is another thing. And this could be poetic or purple to some people.
I also want to add in there, we're talking about a lot of descriptions.
Yeah.
I also want to highlight his dialogue in this prose is amazing.
Yeah.
The reason why I love the characters and specifically the relationships between the characters is because the dialogue perfectly emboldens who you think these characters are.
Definitely.
It gets across their personality in a quick way. Oh my, it's amazing how quickly you connect with the characters because the dialogue between them, and it just takes a few lines. Character voice is on point. The descriptions, I think, are ultimately fairly brief. Like, there, it definitely could lean into that purple-ish prose, and people think of that as a negative. I don't think it goes on. It doesn't pontificate, you know,
like we do.
Yeah, I think it gives just enough, and it's the right amount. So I quite enjoy it for that. I think it's fairly succinct.
It was a pleasure to read. It was awesome. It was very nice to read. It's also one of those books where don't want to focus on the number again because it's part of the conversation. But for me, this was a hard read in that I had to read lines over or paragraphs over to understand things at times, and that's more so. Personal preference to let me preface all this because I thought the conversation was interesting because I walked into this knowing that Guy Cavalcade's prose is just inspirational to authors and knowing it was going to be magnificent, and it was.
Yeah.
So I knew that. So the more interesting conversation that we had was when people were going like, ah, here's what I didn't like, and seeing perspectives of, for example, the one thing that was pointed out as well is authors today using filler words like I see, I heard, I saw. Instead, just say the thing that you saw. So instead of saying, I heard Richard say this, you would just say, Richard said, da-da-da, for more pacing in a book. But what Guy Gavrilcade does, he'll say that I heard, I saw, I this the actual sense, one of the six senses, you know?
And
yeah.
The thing is, that also is a style that works perfectly for this book, being its historical fiction.
Yep.
It gives a sense of history of this thing has happened, especially how the plot is structured with big time jumps. I think the tense and the style, if it was done in a more active voice, I don't think it would be as good. That's why I like his style. Maybe people would complain about it if it was published today. But I think it worked so well for this book.
People have complained about it published today. Ken Liu's books. Ken Liu has a very, not the same style, but I think you can tell it's inspired.
Yeah.
But it's completely his
and
own
you know
thing.
What? Ken Liu.
His prose.
Screw the haters. he's successful on his own. He gets to publish something that's maybe not quite the modern style, but.
Yeah.
It's his style. It's great.
That's what makes it amazing prose is it's your own style and written extremely well. That's what we're rating with prose. And so I was going through all that because I love the prose. And this was a spectacular prose. And also the conversation for people that might not have liked it. Another thing that was brought up because Patrick Leo that gave this a 1-star. People, I'm trying to look at what they didn't like. So that, you know, one day when Rich, you write like Guy Cavalcade. One day when you can write the written word like Guy Cavalcade. That there was a portion in this book, a scene that went from past tense to present tense. We talked about that. And I think it was intentional as well. I'm going to assume this was all intentional, but some people didn't like that it did that. But it looks like the more we look into prose and learn about writing, I think the more we learn that breaking the rules is more than okay.
Breaking the rules is okay as long as you understand the rules.
Comprehension being key, yes.
Yes.
So, and understanding the rules. So it's like a good parody. You understand the genre enough to make fun of it. If you understand prose well enough that you can make it work in a way that isn't traditional, that a worse author, it would sound poorly in. But
well, a break in a literary rule typically brings attention. So if there's a scene you want to particularly stand out, if you break a literary rule or if you break convention, that scene or that line will stand out, which I think is what Guy Cavalcade is going for.
right, maybe an example of if you want to show someone stressing, anxious, panting, instead of going, he pants, he's tired, he doesn't know what to do. And so you could even go and run on and be like, he's panting, not knowing what to do, looking left and right and seeing every single image flash before his eyes and everything is just coming all at once and the world is full of colors and colors and colors and oh my God. Like, that's not a real sentence.
Yeah.
That's not grammatically correct, but to show and evoke the emotion that you're going for, like, you could do whatever you want as a writer. You play God with the written
Shakespeare
word.
Famously came up with so many new words because he thought English could not contain him.
He was too good for
English. He's like, there's not a word for this feeling that I have, and so I'm just going to make a new one.
Yeah.
So Shakespeare could do it. Why can't you?
So to close this, Guy Gavril, okay, fantastic prose.
Yeah.
What word do you want to make up, Rich? Make one up.
Frawly.
Is that a word?
No.
Frawly, F-R-O-L-L-Y?
Combination of frivolous folly.
Huh. Frawly. I like that Frawly. A lot. That's really good.
It's imagine someone's like, it's kind of a hopeless, stupid folly thing to do, but it's just, the style of it is just pointlessness. Mm. It's inevitable, pointless, and also just watching it is silly. It's like, who want to do this?
I like that a lot.
It's a funnier take of more ridicule of someone's folly.
Well, would you look at that?
There you go.
We should go frolly each other, frolic. Shit. Okay, we'll see you next episode.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.